Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Today is Tuesday, April 9th. It is 1:32 p.m. With me is the Vice Chair, Senator Costello, Senator Bishop, Senator Birch, and Senator Gray Jackson, and Chair Reinbold. If you guys could please disable your cell phones so you don't have to bring us a treat from wherever your community is, because we like treats from all over Alaska, not just breeze in. So with that, I really want to thank Natasha McClanahan, the aide that's helped pulling these meetings together, and Nancy Hemingway, thank you. And Eric, thanks for your help moderating the meeting. Today, we have one governor's appointee at the Board of Social Workers Examiner, Mindy Schwishner, that we're going to go ahead and do first. And then we have several people that are going to be testifying in regards to issues with the Title IV rewrite and things we're going to try to iron out on Thursday. And then we are going to take some public testimony as well, hearing the pros and the cons. And so first of all, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to make sure she's online here. Here she is. Yep, she's online. Okay, so Mindy, can you hear us?
Hi, everybody.
Hi there. Okay, yeah, if you could please just introduce yourself, any affiliations, and why you want to be on the Board of Social Work Examiners.
Sure. So my name is Mindy Fisher, and I am a lifelong Alaskan. I've been employed by the state of Alaska for the last 12 and a half years through the Office of Children's Services. And I'm currently a manager in the Fairbanks Field Office. During my time working at OCS, I have been working on my social work profession, and I am currently a licensed clinical social worker. And so the reason I'm interested in being a board member for the Board of Social Work Examiners is because I believe firmly that the social work profession is extremely valuable in our state. And in order to uphold the value and serve Alaskans ethically, we need to have laws, regulations, and practices in place that hold social workers accountable to their license. So I believe I would be giving back to my profession, and I would be treating this appointment as an opportunity not only to enhance the civil social work, but my own learning.
Excellent. Now, all committee members have your resume before them. I'm going to see if anybody has a question for Mindy. Senator Bishop.
Mindy, I'd just like to thank you for putting your name forward. You're doing the Lord's work every day in that division for kids in Alaska, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mindy, if you could just hold on a minute. I'm going to go ahead and see if there's anybody in the room. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify on Mindy? Doesn't look like it, and I don't see anybody online. We got a lot of people online for SB 52. Lots of people online for SB 52. But right now, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony. So, Mindy, I think I can say on behalf of the entire Senate Labor and Commerce, you are doing really difficult work, and it sounds like you got a heart of gold wanting to give back to the community. And thank you for being willing to help our kids out in Alaska, and we wish you the best.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So in accordance with AS 3905080, the Labor and Commerce Committee reviewed the following recommendation, and it's going to be forwarded to the joint session for consideration. Appointee to the Board of Social Work Examiners, Mindy Schwishner. This does not reflect an intent by any members to vote for or against the confirmation during further sessions. We're going to take a brief eddies to sign paperwork while Title IV comes up. Okay, we're going to have Chris Curtis, I think first of all, Senator McChicky, did you want to step up to the plate first or no? Okay. Gotta go take an Addies. We're going to go ahead and gavel back in, and we're just arranging the agenda just a little bit. We're going to go ahead and have the state auditor, one of my favorite employees in the entire state, if you could please just your name, affiliation, and proceed with the audit of the AM. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor, and I have been asked today to provide an overview of audits that we have conducted, recent audits related to Title IV. And we have only one, and that is the sunset audit of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board that is dated November of 2017. So the audit found that in all areas, the board was serving the public's interest except for licensing. We recommended a 4-year extension. That's half of the 8-year maximum allowed for in statute, and that is in recognition that we had 8 recommendations as part of the sunset audit. The audit concluded that the board should improve its procedures for renewing licenses, for issuing recreational site licenses, and for issuing beverage dispensary licenses that encourage tourism. Testing found that these licenses were not consistently issued in accordance with statutes. We also found that operational improvements were needed in enforcing laws and in monitoring board-related local law enforcement activity and for processing refunds to municipalities. So there were 8 recommendations as part of the audit. I'll just provide a very high-level overview. First recommendation is the authority to renew licenses should be limited to the board. Statutes in place were very specific that only the board may issue or renew a license. Statutes allow the board to temporarily delegate their authority to the executive director. However, the audit found that the board had delegated their authority, but it was not temporary. Second recommendation, the board should issue recreational site licenses in accordance with statutory requirements. We tested 10 of 29 recreational site licenses that were active during the period, and we found all 10 were not in compliant with statutes. Statutes are very specific on what qualified as a recreational site. They include baseball games, car races, hockey games, dog sled racing events, and curling matches held during a season. The non-compliant entities that we found were travel tour companies, bowling alleys, an art council, a movie theater, pool hall, and a spa. We found the same issue when we did the prior sunset audit. The board was aware that they were issuing these licenses in violation of statute. However, they believed it was in the public's best interest to do so. They also believed that the licenses would be dealt with in the future rewrite of Title IV. And remember, this was back in 2017. Recommendation number 3, the board should issue beverage dispensary license in accordance with statutory requirements. So we sampled 16 of 126 beverage dispensary license, and we found that 5 were issued, 5 were transferred, and 6 were issued that did not comply with statutes. Statutes give the board the authority to renew or issue a beverage dispensary licenses if it appears that the license encourages tourism without regard to population limits at the time. So the statutes provide a minimum number of rental rooms for an entity to qualify as a business that encourages tourism. And what we found was the errors we found were with entities that did not meet the minimum number of rooms. The board believed that it was appropriate to continue to issue these licenses because the original licenses were issued prior to 1985, which is the date that that this law went into effect. However, there were no statutory grandfathering provisions at that time. Recommendation number 4, the board, the AMPCO director, and the enforcement supervisor should work together to establish an enforcement plan to guide or to direct AMPCO's limited enforcement resources. And when we say AMPCO, we mean the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. That is the office that supports both the Marijuana Control Board and the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. There is limited resources in that office. We found there was no plan to prioritize the use of those resources. Rec 5, the board and AMPCO director should implement a process to monitor and track complaints to ensure they are assessed for follow-up and investigated in a timely manner. Pretty self-explanatory. Rec 6, we recommend the board and the AMPCO director develop written procedures for updating the statewide database with restricted purchasers. The statewide database of written orders is used to control the sale of alcohol to restricted areas of the state. It is also used to provide package store licensees with a list of individuals who have been convicted of illegally manufacturing or selling alcohol. The stores are prohibited from selling alcohol to these restricted purchasers. And the audit found that the restricted purchasers were not being entered into the database. We also found that the court system was not providing the reports of convictions to the office consistently. Rec number 7, the board and AMCO staff should improve procedures to ensure municipalities report violations of alcohol beverage laws. There is a statute that requires municipalities to provide this information as a condition of receiving half of the biannual license fees. And we found that of 40 locations, only 4 had been submitting the information, yet the fees were being routinely refunded to the municipalities. And then Rec 8, the AMCO director should develop and implement procedures to ensure refunds to municipalities are appropriately reviewed. We found that there was just one staff person who was calculating the amount of the refunds and approving the payments to the municipalities. Those duties should be segregated.
Senator Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I kind of wanted to wait until you got through all 8, but back on number 6, the written procedures for updating the statewide database with restricted purchasers. Is that a limited pool? I'm familiar with the red stripe deal in Anchorage on driver's licenses, but I was wondering if you could clarify what restricted purchasers relates to, and you know, and the tie back to the court system and so forth. Through the chair.
Yeah, through the chair, the restricted purchasers are those people that were convicted of illegally selling or manufacturing alcohol. And so those, the court system has been providing that information to the Marijuana Control Office. They, the staff, enter the information into the database. The stores themselves check that information and have some type of controls to make sure they're not selling alcohol to those restricted purchasers. Does that answer your
follow-up?
Please.
It's not as easy as looking for the red stripe and a driver's license. I'm just wondering how do they make that work? I mean, it seems like, you know, you've got to, is it 50 names or 100 names or a couple hundred names? Or I'm just curious about the mechanics of making that function.
Through the chair, I don't know the answer to that. If the executive director of AMCO is on, I'm sure she can enlighten us. I don't know. I'd be curious, too.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair.
She is. I'm going to go ahead and pause. And Erica McConnell, are you online? I think they need to unmute your line. Okay, if you want to answer, feel free. And thanks for being here today, Erica.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Erica McConnell, the Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. So we do maintain a statewide database as required by statute. But my understanding is that the stores check it when they're fulfilling written orders, and that the walk-in people, they evaluate license, you know, red stripes and that sort of thing. But I'd be happy to provide a more complete answer in writing.
Oh, that's okay. I was just kind of curious as to how the mechanics of that work. I mean, it seemed like it'd be a pretty heavy lift to put on a grocery clerk to know. I mean, the red stripe is one thing, but I just didn't know how you would make that function and how many names are on the list, and then how you would make that the seller functionally aware of that information. But yeah, if you could provide that as a follow-up through to the chair, that would be helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Erica. Let's see if there's any other. Senator Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Erica, for responding to my question about the licenses that are currently in the process of transferring ownership. It's something that I became aware of through several locations in my district where you would go in and the restaurant or the restaurant might have been there for years, and then they tell us that, you know, they're waiting for the transfer of their license. And when I asked if they would, they should be contacting the agency to see about the status, they indicated that they were not interested in doing that because they didn't want to slow the process down by indicating that they're really eager to get their license. And so I started to look into this issue. Right now, there are 46 licenses that are in the process of being transferred, and the website for the board says that individuals should plan for 3 to 6 months for the processing of the transfer of the license to become finalized. There's several on the list, and I have it here, and I think members might have it, but, you know, as far back as June of last year, there's a restaurant that is looking for a license transfer. And I think that the work that the board does is important, but I do feel that in some cases that the time period that individual small business owners have to wait in order to see the transfer of their license is excessive, and in some cases I think it's almost bordering on punitive. Madam Chair, I do have an amendment to the Title IV rewrite bill to help address the situation, but Chris, could you talk about that? I mean, what is reasonable? And, you know, businesses are, they purchase the business with the expectation that they will be able to serve the same food and alcohol that previous customers deserve and have come to know. You know, one of the restaurants in the district has been there for years and years, and customers are actually going elsewhere because they're just simply, you know, they want to have a beer with their pizza or whatever. And so how is this business friendly? And I'm just curious, you know, what we can do as a legislature to try to encourage an environment where small business owners can purchase a business and then have some sort of confidence that the state will back them up in you know, doing these license transfers in a more timely manner.
Senator Costello, through the chair, I can only answer that question generically across all occupational boards. When we do an audit and we see a problem with this, sometimes it has to do with resources. Possibly there's been a big influx of applications and not the resources to process them. That's been an answer. Sometimes it's that there are incomplete and inaccurate applications. Sometimes there's problems with the applications themselves that slow down the application process. Sometimes it's how often a board meets to conduct their business. So there could be a lot of reasons. There have been improvements made, I've seen, with other boards where they allow electronic applications with edit checks to help speed things up and prevent those types of errors from happening up front. We've seen changes to the application themselves to prevent certain types of problems from coming up. So I can't answer your question specifically. I can say that with this particular board, during our survey phase of an audit where we're figuring out what we want to test or look at, we did not identify the timeliness as being an issue. This is back a few years ago, but it's certainly something we can look at the next sunset audit.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Oh, please.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Chris, for that. And I realize you're the one doing the looking into it and doing the audit. Is there something that prevents the board from having telephonic meetings?
Through the chair, I don't know. I don't know if there is. I'd have to look into that.
Thank you.
Senator Cassell, would you like to ask Erica McConnell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Erica, are there any comments you want to make related to my question about the timeliness of the transfers, and also are you allowed to have electronic meetings or telephonic meetings?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, this is Erica McConnell, Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. Thank you for your question. First of all, I'd like to emphasize that there is no requirement for a business to stop selling alcohol while they are going through a transfer process. I do understand that there was a situation with a restaurant in your district, and we communicated with your office and with that restaurant last year, and I am unsure why they chose to stop serving and selling while they were going through the transfer process. That was not at the direction of this office. There are, as Ms. Curtis said, my apologies, there are certain elements of the transfer process that are in the office's control, and there are certain elements that are in the applicant's control. With the two first applicants or licensees that are listed on the chart that I provided to you, they did what's called a transfer with a security interest, and they are required to provide us with the final recorded security interest documents after board approval before the transfer can be effectuated. So in that situation, we are actually waiting on the licensee to provide information to us before we can finish the process. So I do think that if we could modernize to a more user-friendly online application licensing system, we would be able to make improvements to this process. I think having applicants be directed on what information to sort of put in what field in an online application could reduce errors and speed up the process. We have requested in the fiscal note for SB 52 to be able to update and modernize our licensing system. As for your other question regarding telephonic meetings, there is a provision in statute at 04 06050, which states the board shall also meet at least once each year in each judicial district of the state to study this title and to modify existing board regulations in light of statewide and local problems. And our understanding is that provision is in statute because it recognizes that different communities have different issues related to alcohol, and what might be the case in Juneau, for example, may be different in Bethel, and so having the, or, you know, Kotzebue or Anchorage, and so having the board meet in different areas of the state allows them to examine the issues that are particular to different areas of the state and allows licensees who are in different locations to have some access to their regulatory body. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just a comment.
Yes, please.
Thank you for that. So I guess there's probably some miscommunication because this has not just occurred with one restaurant or eatery in my district, but several. And so I would just like to put on the record that if there's anything that the board can do to communicate when the transfer application is placed, you know, before you, that you communicate with the small business owner about the fact that the transfer application doesn't necessarily mean that they stop serving, because I think that, you know, there are economic consequences to stopping serving alcohol at a location that has traditionally had that. And so I just want to, you know, emphasize that I think that that's something that's pretty important, and I think that that would help resolve some of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any final comments, Chris? Looks like you're good here. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you. Okay, so next we're going to go to Department of Public Safety, and then we'll go to CHAR, and then we'll go to Department of Law, just so you know who's on deck. And then everybody, all the public testimony, we're going to get to you as soon as we can. We need to get some really important things on record today. So with that, Deputy Commissioner Michael Duxbury, are you ready to make any comments on this bill?
Hello, Madam Chair. I got interrupted by the announcement that my line is unmuted. Could you please state what you said again, please?
Oh, yes. Just your name, affiliation, and any comments that you would be – I'm not sure if you're testifying today or if you're actually testifying on the bill today. If you have any concerns from Department of Public Safety.
Madam Chair, I have been my name is Michael Duxbury. I am the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. And I have been in consultation with the Department of Law and also with our special assistants on the bill. I understand that there are things that are being worked out and looked at. At this point in time, those things are being addressed, and we look forward to further communication on ways to help the sponsor of this bill.
Okay, and Deputy Commissioner Duxbury, we're trying to do amendments on Thursday. I've extended the date. They were due on Monday at 5, but we've extended it because we missed one meeting, so they're now due 5 o'clock on Wednesday. If you could work with whoever you know, either probably in particular Senator McChicky's office or my office, that would be really helpful, okay? But thank you for being available. I don't know if we're going to have questions for you. Are you able to stay online?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, I am able to stay on line, and there is a concerted effort for us to do just exactly as you said, is speak with and consult with and be available to help the sponsor of the bill in this situation. Thank you, ma'am.
Excellent, because we're hoping to get this bill out, if at all possible, if it's the will of the committee on next Tuesday. So we really want to try to iron things out either Thursday or Tuesday. So thank you. Next up, we're going to have Alaska Char, Sarah Oates, name, affiliation, and testimony. I think we gave you 5 minutes. I'm not positive. It's not written on my agenda here. But
thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Oates, and I am the president and CEO of the Alaska Cabaret Hotel Restaurant Retailers Association, commonly referred to as Alaska Char. I want to first quickly apologize for my absence at last week's hearing and to make clear for the record at the get-go that Alaska Char does not support the current version of this bill. Previous to this position, as I testified in a previous hearing, I worked for the state's Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office for 7.5 years, many of those years working directly on comprehensive Title IV reform as a subject matter expert. And like many of you in this committee, I have seen many versions of this comprehensive bill be considered by the legislature over the past 5 years. Each session, only very small changes to Title IV have passed through the legislature, which was due to ongoing debates between the three tiers of the alcohol industry about current and proposed privileges and prohibitions of manufacturing license types. Unfortunately, most of the proposed changes in the comprehensive bills, which would add substantial clarity to improve compliance and enforcement and would be to the significant benefit of the public's health and welfare, have yet to pass through the legislature. Members from the three industry tiers have attempted to come to a compromise on manufacturing operations for years with mild success. The version of this bill that you are considering today is largely identical to the version of Senate Bill 76 that passed through the Senate during the last legislative session. That version had a section of the original bill removed, which was a crucial component of the compromise from Alaska Char's perspective, and with other components of that compromise being left in the bill. For that reason, Alaska Char cannot support the current version of this bill, and we are recommending that the contentious pieces of the bill be removed in order for the entire industry to again support this bill as we have in the past, or versions of this bill in the past. So specifically, the manufacturing pieces that I'm talking about are almost all of the manufacturing changes that you see within this bill, with the following exceptions. The revised penalty provisions that would amend all penalties, or most penalties, from being Class A misdemeanors down to violations. We recommend including those in Title IV, or making those revisions to manufacturing licenses in Title IV. We recommend increasing the license fees for manufacturing licenses to $2,500 per license type, as other retail license types and wholesale license types would have increased fees in this bill. We also propose including in there the requirement that at least 80% of each final alcohol product offered for sale must be manufactured on the licensed premises. Prohibitions for large manufacturers, which are those that are substantially larger than any currently licensed in this state, but when in effect, existing manufacturers would only be able to sell products to licensed wholesalers or to entities in other states and countries, so that they couldn't come in and buy up existing license types and monopolize our current businesses and our current alcohol industry. And then a couple of other small changes that I requested were that the tasting event permit language be amended. This is, as you've heard, this has been a very long, ongoing, multi-year process. And at the end of 2018, there was a meeting where one single licensee came in and was requesting changes to the tasting event permit section that were not agreeable to the rest of the alcohol industry, to our members. And those changes did get put into this bill. And so Attachment A, which I have provided to you, would essentially revert the language back to what has been agreed upon by the alcohol industry over the years. And then one other small change that I have requested would be to amend Section 145 regarding, it's specifically amending the gaming statute. And the currently what is proposed in Section 145 would really disqualify about a third of existing vendor locations that many, many nonprofits across the state use for gaming revenue, and as is the current language, could really financially impact lots of nonprofit corporations. So I'm happy to answer any questions about specific changes that we are proposing, but I will also say that I have been communicating with the Brewers Guild, and I'm sure there are many of them who are on the phone who will be testifying in support of the current version of Senate Bill 62, but we are working with each other. Our boards and committees are going to be continuing to work together to propose changes, if not these, that I have before you that everybody can be amenable to. Thank you.
Okay, Sarah, I'm going to see if there's any questions from anybody. I don't see questions right now. Oh, go ahead, Senator Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got some concerns and some questions about it. It seems like, you know, this has been I thought we were almost to the finish line last year, and I guess I'm worried about kind of having some changing guidelines. I recognize you're representing a large number of organizations, and there's probably a large number of opinions there, but I guess, trying to firm that up, do you support what's in the law today? And, would you prefer the status quo to the changes that are forecast, or where do you fall down on that side, through the chair?
Senator Birch, through the chair, thank you for that question. I will clarify that our organization as a whole does not support the retail tier, does not support existing operations of manufacturers as they have been expanding. We do support and have supported in the past allowing existing manufacturers to continue operating the way that they are. But as more manufacturers come on board, it is substantially cutting into the revenues of many of our retailers across the state. And so while our recommendations here, our proposals here, would be to eliminate most of the manufacturing sections from this bill, which in effect would enable or allow existing manufacturers to continue operating the way in which they have been, that is because we want all of the good pieces of this bill, the pieces for which there is no tension, to get passed through, and then have those smaller pieces regarding manufacturing privileges and prohibitions potentially be settled through smaller, completely separate pieces of legislation. Now, we haven't introduced any legislation to address that. I don't know. I don't believe that manufacturers have either, but I guess the objective here is to have those things battled out, so to speak, completely separately, and have a big consensus type bill be presented here before you today.
Senator Birch.
Thank you for that clarification. So I guess that the goal, as I understand it, is not to disrupt current operations, but with the exception of that one aspect, you would be good with moving forward with this legislation and then coming up with some follow-up modifications down the road, through the chair?
Senator Birch, through the chair, we would be supportive of modifying this piece of legislation as I outlined in the document that I sent to you on Saturday, in order to remove the pieces for which we don't have consensus, for which there are still contention, and then potentially working out the issues and disputes between the manufacturer and retail tiers in separate pieces of legislation. And I hope that answers your question, Senator.
Okay, thank you for the time being.
Thank you. And Sarah, I do in particular appreciate, I looked into that misdemeanor A and violations, and I definitely want, I'm going to follow up at a later time with Department of Public Safety in regards to that, because it's already gotten on record. And also the section 145, I think that is an important issue that you brought up. However, I hope you don't take this wrong, but it almost seems like you're trying to micromanage, distilleries and wineries and breweries, and put restrictions and forcing them to, make it on their premises. Well, that might not be a very cost-effective model. And putting a lot of, increasing fees to $2,500 for a small brewery, maybe a lot. I know that I've spoken to the breweries in my area, and they're struggling with that. So anyway, with Alaska Grown, I think it's just so doggone important, and I really appreciate you bringing this. We are going to think about all these and process them, but I really think that everybody has to compromise, and you guys may need to end up compromising in regards to this. There was one other question I wanted to ask you. Is there anything in regards to the sizing of how many they're allowed to taste right now? Are you guys bringing that issue again? Because I was in the room when the bill got killed last year because of that controversy, and I personally thought it was outrageous that you guys were trying to limit the tasting amounts in those places. Are you guys bringing that up, or are you not this year?
Madam Chair, we are not proposing that any piece of comprehensive Title IV legislation like Senate Bill 52 include restrictions to the ways in which manufacturers currently can operate.
So the breweries, wineries, and the distilleries, is that correct? You're not going to try to cap how much they're allowed? Is that you're just going to keep, you're not going to fight what they're allowed to do right now, is that correct?
Madam Chair, we are not going to propose introducing any amendments to this bill or a comprehensive bill that would restrict them. That's correct.
Okay, thank you. We really do appreciate it. I hope you took my comments. I'm just a huge local person that really believes in Alaska businesses, because, you know, just flying a bunch of stuff up here and you know, when you can provide jobs and local products, I just think it's super, super important. But we are going to work with you. My staff, Natasha, has been working with you closely, and we're going to continue. So we will circle back around in the next day or two and try to iron out some of these things. So really appreciate you being online. Next, we are going to move to John Skidmore. You're on the line, Department of Law. And if you could, we have a ton of people online. And so, John, I know you really well. And can you kind of keep your comments to 5 minutes?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. This is John Skidmore. I'm the Director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. I'll be happy to keep my comments very limited here. SB 52 is a bill predominantly designed to address regulation of the industry. And that's not the purpose for which the criminal division reviews the bill. We don't take a position on how the industry is regulated in that standpoint. But what we do focus on is the prosecution of crimes, predominantly local option areas where there are crimes for the manufacture or importation of alcohol, where the citizens have voted not to have alcohol in their communities. And there are really four things that we've noticed in the bill. And let me be clear, these are things that we have discussed with the sponsor. These are things that we are actively working on with the sponsor. And so we have good reason to believe these issues will be resolved, but I was asked just to place them on the record today. So those four areas are first for manufacturing. The manufacturing components of the bill seem to predominantly focus, like I said, on the industry. They don't focus on what we see in some rural communities, which is homebrew, and by that I don't mean just making beer. I mean folks who take a 5-gallon bucket, some sugar, some yeast, and whatever they can find in the kitchen to throw into that 5-gallon bucket to make some sort of alcoholic concoction. It's unclear if the definitions that are found in Section 144 on page 107 of the bill would actually cover that type of manufacturing of homebrew or not. Brewed beverages, distilled spirits, kombucha, mead, sake, wine, those are some of the items or the terms that are defined. It's unclear if those terms are broad enough to include the conduct that I described as that manufacturing of homebrew, not a local brewing beer in your house for consumption, but sort of a different concept. The second area that we have a concern about really is the importation of alcohol into those local option communities. The bill seems to be focused on the industry, and it's not our belief that there are folks in the industry that are actively trying to send alcohol into those communities. There are a couple of issues related to this importation. One, some of the sections seem to remove the idea of possessing with the intent to import from the statutes. That's a fairly significant phrase. We use it both in interdiction of alcohol as well as interdiction of drugs. The idea that someone may not have completed that importation does not mean that there is not conduct that needs to be addressed. and it's the ability to prosecute that attempt. The person that is interdicted at the airport or in a snow machine heading into the village with quantities of alcohol, that there is a presumption that those are for sale, and yet if they don't actually cross that jurisdictional boundary, then they have not completed it yet. Being able to prosecute those attempts is important for us. The third area that, and so for that second area for importation, just creating some greater clarity would be helpful to ensure that we're able to continue to prosecute and to protect those communities that have said that they don't want alcohol imported into their communities. The other thing that goes along with that is a lot of the discussion talks about having licenses to do various things, licenses to have a brewery or a distillery or a winery, or licenses for retail sales, and they talk about being on premises. And what we're concerned about is the individual that puts a number of bottles of alcohol into their luggage and then goes to a local option community and is selling that alcohol out of their backpack or out of their luggage. That's not having a premise-based sale. It's a completely different type of sale, and it's not clear that the bill as drafted would be able to address those concerns. The third area that I turn to is penalties. I don't think this is in any way intentional. I think this is an oversight. But there is a statute that deals with penalties. It's Alaska Statute 0416-200. That particular statute is not listed in the bill anywhere. That statute is one that deals with penalties and mandatory minimums for importation or other activities into those local option communities. And because that penalty provision refers back to the statute that originally criminalized it, Alaska Statute 0411-010, but that statute, 0411-010, has now been broken up and the conduct is placed in several other statutes. That would mean that Alaska Statute 0416-200 needs to be amended if it's the intent for those mandatory minimums to still apply. And I can't tell you whether it is or not, but we simply wanted to point out that concept. And then the fourth and last but not least then deals with common carriers and transportation of alcohol into communities. There is some ambiguity at the moment with common carriers in that packages have to be labeled if there's a certain amount of alcohol, but then it says these common carrier provisions don't apply if it's under a certain amount of alcohol. And what's unclear is whether or not there are labeling requirements or restrictions applying to those small amounts of alcohol going into communities. And when I say smaller, that would be under a felony level. So it's, you know, 3-4 bottles, not the 20 or 30 bottle type of situation. So those are sort of the four areas that we've looked at, and we've identified some what we believe to be unintended consequences, and we are working with the sponsor to clarify those things. But I was asked to place those on the record today. I'm happy to answer any questions if the committee has any.
Senator Birch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Skidmore, for your testimony this afternoon. You know, this brings to mind, when you talk about statute, you know, laws that are on the books that are, you know, either maybe they're outdated or they've been ignored, or just because I'm not an attorney and I'm not as familiar certainly with on the legal side as you might be, do we have or do we keep any sort of an accounting of law that it's in statute, it's been adopted, maybe it was 30 or 40 years ago, but it's, you know, it needs to be retired or eliminated? Does the Department of Law have any sort of a periodic assessment, if you will, of outdated legislation that needs to be trued up? Through the chair,
Senator Birch, I cannot speak for the civil division as it relates to tracking laws, regulating industries, or other things. My expertise and what I'm capable of speaking to is really about the criminal laws. And I can tell you that each and every year, the Department of Law Criminal Division solicits ideas from our prosecutors across the state about areas of law that they think may need to see some revisions, We go through a process to debate those things internally to see if there are revisions that we think would be appropriate and that could be helpful. And then ultimately we take those concepts and we share them with the administration and either pursue them in governor's bills or talk about those that are approved for pursuit with other legislators. So we keep a track of it in that manner, but we don't have a list per se, and nor can I tell you that we're reviewing statutes that were passed, you know, 5 years ago. Here's the five-year mark. We need to review it and see how it's doing. So it's nothing of that nature, but there is a constant review for us of criminal statutes, and I apologize. I can't speak to the statutes that don't involve criminal law.
Fair enough. Thank you very much, John. Appreciate the background and your contributions here this afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. John, I definitely appreciate your input on this bill. The sponsor has shared your concerns with my office, but I wanted to make sure all committee members had that information. And I know the sponsor's working with you. We will be working as well with you. So I know you're working on 32, 33, 34, 35, and also in the House on lots of bills, but I hope you'll work with us because we were really, really hoping to get this bill out of committee next Tuesday, okay? So thank you very much. So we're going to go ahead and what I'm going to do quickly is ask if we're going to do the fiscal notes next, but it's going to take quite a bit of time. I have four people, but instead I would rather get to public testimony. So I'm going to make sure that, Brandon, are you in the room? Can you wait, Brandon? Okay. And Erica, can you wait so I can get through some public testimony?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Erica. And Sarah Chambers, can you wait? Is she unmuted? Okay. Okay, well, okay. And then Matt Davidson. Can you wait? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, with that, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to take one more person before, which we have online. He is with Department of Public Safety. I know we already got Michael here. And then we've got Lieutenant John Brown. I wanted to from Ketchikan, I know you're up for questions, but I wanted to give you the opportunity before we move into public testimony, if you had anything else that you wanted to get on the record.
Madam Chair, I don't have anything to add to the record. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get a few online, and then we'll get to some of the people in the room. We're going to be able to manage this and get done on time today. So first of all, we're going to go with Bill Howell in Sterling. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony.
Hello, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Howell. I live in Sterling, Alaska. Coming to you from the Kenai LIO. My affiliation is I'm a member of the general public. I don't manufacture, distribute, or sell any alcohol. However, I do write about it. I'm a freelance beer writer, and I've been tracking the progress of this Title IV rewrite for several years now. I actually had Senator Michiki on my radio show in December of 2017 to grill him about it pretty extensively for the better part of an hour. And I wanted to present, I don't know how many people you're going to have here today from the general public who basically do not have a financial stake in how this gets hashed out. But I wanted to say a quick word on the behalf of those of us out here who consume alcohol, who are basically the fish and game that are being harvested by the various people who hold licenses from the state that allow them to sell us alcohol and reap the profits therefrom. And what I wanted to say is I actually believe this bill is a good idea. The system is incredibly complex. It's very difficult to navigate. I know I've spent a lot of time trying to understand it. And it's not easy. The new bill seems to clarify a lot of things. I recognize CHAR's opposition is based on their idea that because they bought a license, they have a right to milk me for money. But I believe that the people of Alaska are much more supportive of a more open way to purchase alcohol supportive of the economic development that goes with that. And so I'd like to, as I said, I just wanted to take the time to come in and voice my support for the bill as written without any further restrictions on our manufacturers. So thank you for your time.
Bill, thank you very much. We really appreciate your testimony today. You had some good input. Next, we are going to go to somebody in the room. Amund, are you here? Okay, do you want to come up? I'm going to give you guys 2 minutes. If you can stick to 2 minutes, that would be appreciative.
Thank you. Is this close enough? Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to testify. I'm here speaking on the behalf of Amalga Distillery. We're a small distillery right down the street. We just wanted to voice our support for SB 52. We think it's a good step forward for alcohol laws in the state as it provides clarity and increases enforcement funding, which we think would be good for public safety. I wanted to note that this doesn't directly benefit us. It just clarifies certain laws that might help us in the future or other businesses or future businesses that might open up. We also understand that license fees would double, but we still support this as we would hope that it would go towards enforcement. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much for testifying. Yeah. We really, really appreciate it. So next we're going to go to Beverly. Yeah. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Beverly Schoonover, and I'm the acting director of the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and the Alaska Mental Health Board. And these state agencies are statutorily charged with planning and coordinating behavioral health services funded by the state of Alaska. The boards are in full support of SB 52, which provides the much-needed update to the Title IV provisions and includes prevention measures to reduce underage drinking. Some good news about underage drinking in Alaska is, according to the annual Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, which is the YRBS, over the last 25 years, there's been declines in the percentage of youth starting drinking before the age of 13. Some bad news about underage drinking in Alaska is we know underage drinking in Alaska happens. We also know that Alaskan teens are binge drinking alcohol. For the YRBS in 2017, nearly 14% of all the students surveyed reported current binge drinking within the last 30 days. That's 4 or more drinks for females, 5 or more drinks for males. Underage drinking, and especially binge drinking, is harmful to adolescent brain development. We also want Alaskan teens driving under the influence or engaging in other risky behaviors while under the influence of alcohol. We believe the preventative measures outlined in SB 52 will reduce underage drinking for the following reasons. SB 52 holds adults who supply alcohol to youth accountable by maintaining current penalties for furnishing alcohol to a minor. This bill ensures that everyone who sells alcohol at a licensed business or permanent event is properly trained to check IDs so they don't sell alcohol to underage Alaskans. This bill also provides much-needed resources for enforcement of Title IV by increasing license fees, many which haven't been increased in decades, and which has continued to limit the ABC board's ability to do their job. For example, compliance checks at licensed businesses have not been funded for the last 3 years. Compliance checks are a nationwide best practice, and when all licensees know they will be regularly inspected, they will have a clear incentive to properly train their staff. Thank you to the sponsor of this bill, Senator Machicki, for his steadfast leadership, and to the large group of diverse contributors who have worked hard to find solutions through compromise and move these changes forward. Thank you also to Recover Alaska and its partner organizations for all their work on this effort. Thank you for the consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Beverly. It was important input. We appreciate it. Okay, so next I'm going to go to Galen Jones. In Anchorage, can you hear us? Galen?
Yeah, hello.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed. Name, affiliation, and your two-minute testimony.
Hi, through the chair. Hello, everyone. My name is Galen Jones. I'm co-owner and co-founder of Double Shovel Cider Company in Anchorage, Alaska. Thanks for taking the time to hear my testimony today. So we've attended numerous meetings, steering committee meetings over the past 3 years, and we're really thankful for the efforts put forth by Senator Machicki and the other members of the steering committee, many of which have been involved for a lot longer than us. So pretty much all the revisions we've suggested have been welcomed and incorporated in the current version of the bill. These revisions weren't just beneficial for Double Trouble or just cideries. They will benefit Alaska's entire economy because they promote an atmosphere friendly and conducive to new manufacturing investments and startups in the state. Progressive legislation in touch with the consumer's taste creates additional tax revenue, promotes vibrant hospitality scene, attracting tourism and new residents. It also creates skilled jobs and most of all enables growth of local manufacturers' wholesale capacity so they can export products and bring money back to the state of Alaska from outside. This is what's so cool about local manufacturers. Our ability to create tax revenue isn't constrained by the consumer having to be physically in Alaska. So we should be striving to shape regulations to promote this bright spot in Alaska's economy. Similar to states like Oregon, Colorado, and Washington, all of which have booming manufacturing scenes and export massive volumes of craft beverages. So it's important we don't move the state backwards and restrict our atmosphere, harming local manufacturing companies or the hospitality scene, which includes bars and restaurants. This could dissuade new manufacturing startups from opening in Alaska, and that would be harmful to our economy. And as I said, also to bars and restaurants, because the Alaskan consumer has been showing an overwhelming desire to support local companies and consume locally made products. All that said, I also wanted to mention that, you know, we can definitely live with the higher licensing fees outlined in the bill. Although we never like having to cut away our already small margins due to the shipping wholesale ingredients all the way up to Alaska, which can be pretty spendy. We understand these fees will benefit Amcor's ability to better serve license holders and Alaska residents with more consistent enforcement and faster customer service. Thanks again for listening to my testimony today. That's everything.
Thank you, Galen. We appreciate your input. Next, we're going to go to Senator Birch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Birch here. I just wanted to thank you for your long-term engagement in this effort and process, not only producing a fine craft beverage in South Anchorage, but also your leadership in working through this effort. I'm kind of struck by the parallels with the last year with the Uber and Lyft and the fact that you're actually growing a market, and I think you've clearly demonstrated that the craft beverage and the breweries and the cideries and so forth have really expanded the market in Alaska. And I just say keep up the good work and appreciate your testimony this afternoon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Birch, thank you very much. I appreciate those words.
Excellent. Okay, so next we're going to move to Matt Sue Health Foundation, Elizabeth Ripley.
Good afternoon, Chair Reinbold, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Ripley, and I serve as the CEO of the Matsu Health Foundation. Matsu Health Foundation shares ownership in Matsu Regional Medical Center, and we take our share of the profits and we reinvest them back into the community in the form of grants and scholarships in order to measurably improve the health of the Matsu population. In 2013, we conducted a community health needs assessment where we looked at data analysis, we did polling, we held 24 community forums where residents got to vote on the number one health issue in Matsu. The number one health issue in Matsu was alcohol and substance use. We followed that up by talking to lots of folks, including our police captains and chiefs, and we said, what's the number one substance? And they said, make no mistake, it's alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. It's also the number one reason that people between the ages of 19 and 64 visit our emergency department at Matsu Regional Medical Center. It's a major factor, as you're aware, in many crimes committed in Alaska, including domestic violence and child maltreatment. And having a well-regulated alcohol industry that understands and follows the laws is part of the solution. Alcohol is not an ordinary commodity. It's not like Matanuska-grown carrots or mat-made milk. It has a cost. It generates $1.84 billion in costs due to lost productivity, traffic collisions, criminal justice, and health care annually, according to the Alaska Mental Health Trust's annual 2015 report. So we need, and Title IV hasn't been updated, as you've talked about already, so we need this systemic redraft of Title IV, which will help the ABC Board carry out its mission, and it will benefit organizations and individuals whose work, community, or business is affected by alcoholic beverage laws and regulations. And the Health Foundation is particularly interested in the public health aspects. There's definitely there's wins and takeaways for every stakeholder group. There, thanks to Senator Michiki, Recover Alaska was a large stakeholder group effort over multi-years. The Health Foundation is also part of Recover Alaska. And CHAR and industry reps were at that table. They were part of helping to create this revised compromise document. We appreciate Senator Michiki's leadership in bringing this forward and his patience and persistence. CHAR is using this bill to fight competition due to changes on the competitive landscape. It's like taxis versus ride sharing. You brought that up. It's exactly like that. They are protecting their members at the expense of Alaskans. And we need to move this bill forward with or without the support of CHAR. Thank you.
We're back after a brief technical challenge. And Beverly, I just wanted to make sure I got on the record to say thank you very much from the Mat-Su Health Foundation. I'm sure that's been an immense amount of work, and you brought some really good statistics, and Senator Costello was asked for follow-up in regards to that, which we'll get on record. Okay, so thank you very much. Next, we are going to go to Soldotna. So we're going to go to Doug Ho, and then just on deck will be Jan Hill. So, Doug, if you could please proceed, name and affiliation. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Can you speak a little louder?
How does that sound?
A little louder. There you go.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Doug Ho. I'm from Soldotna, Alaska, and I'm representing Kenai River Brewing Company. Kenai River Brewing Company has been in business for approximately 13 years, and we've grown both in business and community involvement in those years. I now have 22 full-time employees working in the brewery and the tap room. We recently built and expanded a brand new facility using local designers and contractors. We contribute to many local nonprofits and charitable events, both in our community and around the state. The passing of this bill will allow us to continue our growth and employment curve, as well as providing a valuable gathering place for our community. The rewrite of Title IV has been a long process involving many stakeholders and the major rewrite of the alcohol laws of Alaska. The passing of this bill will bring fairness, a clear understanding of licenses, and easier compliance for all license holders. With that, we do support SB 52 as it's written, and we also would like to thank Senator Michiki for all the work that he and his group have done on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doug. We really appreciate your involvement. So next, we're going to go to Jan Hill in Haines.
Good afternoon. My name is Jan Hill. I'm calling from Haines, and I was a member of the Title IV Review Steering Committee. I will start my testimony now. I was a member of the Title IV Review Steering Committee and involved throughout the process, including serving as co-chair of the Local Options Subcommittee, along with Christopher Simon, formerly with the Department of Education and Early Development. I have multiple perspectives on alcohol policy. As a former member of the Alaska Native Health Board, I am acutely aware of the impacts of alcohol on Native Alaskans and the health of our Alaska Native peoples. While I'm not speaking for the Haines Borough, in my role as borough mayor, I support economic development in my community, and I also understand the importance of the hospitality industry for Southeast communities. I care very much about the health and safety of my community and reducing crime. As a member of the Alaska Municipal League and the Conference of Mayors, I have gained an appreciation for the diversity of challenges local governments face throughout Alaska and the need to balance economic development with the real costs of alcohol to our state and to our cities, large and small. Title IV very much needs to be modernized, and Senate Bill 52 is a huge step forward. We worked for almost 7 years to get to this point. As co-chair of the local option subcommittee, we talked extensively about the impacts of alcohol in dry and damp communities, alcohol-related crimes, and the need to improve Title IV in order to increase enforcement. While there is still much work to be done with local option laws, specifically, Senate Bill 52 makes some important changes. One of these is giving rural communities access to existing data about legal alcohol sales and deliveries, so the communities and law enforcement can understand the flow of alcohol into rural Alaska. Another is regulating internet sales to ensure that a person in a dry community is not using this loophole to get around the monthly order limits in our laws. I support this bill, and I urge you to pass Senate Bill 52 this year. Thank you for your consideration and the opportunity to testify.
And thank you very much for your involvement. We really appreciate it, and really appreciated your testimony as well. So I'm going to jump to Anchorage, Diane DeSanto, and then we will have Homer, Mel Stridham, and then there's five people from Healthy Choices in Anchorage, and if you guys could coordinate, you know, let me know if you're each going to be speaking or not. I'll get to you in a few minutes, but I have promised four people to speak on the fiscal notes today, and I've got to get to that at 10 till. So I'm going to go ahead, and if you guys can do it in a minute, please do. If not, I will allow 2 minutes. But let's go to Diane DeSanto.
Hi, my name is Diane DeSanto. I live in Anchorage. I'm a constituent of Senator Costello and a big fan of Senator L.D. Gray Jackson. I'm a social worker. I've seen firsthand the destructive effects of alcohol on families, communities, and public health. I support the rewrite of Title IV. I am sorry to hear Char saying that they're looking at it, they're not happy with it. This has been going on since 2012 and I think since 1980. They haven't even really had a good rewrite. So you heard from all the other testifiers the importance of it and the harms of alcohol. And I just want to say, if this bill passed, I support Senate Bill 52. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Diane. Next, we're going to go to Mel Stridham and Homer, and then we're going to come circle back around to the five people with Healthy Voices, Healthy Choices. So please proceed, Mel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mel Stridham. I am the president of MSA, Inc. We have six package store licenses in the city of Homer. And my concern is with Section 48, the amendment that's going to allow a borough package store license to be transferred into the city. I have two concerns with this. One concern is that our city, and I'm sure most cities in Alaska, already are over the statutory limit of how many package stores they should be allowed based on the one package store per 3,000 population. I know our city would only have two licenses under that law if it were not for grandfathering, and we currently have eight package store licenses in our city. My main concern is the financial impact this will have on my business. Borough licenses traditionally are much less expensive than city licenses, and that's because the populations are in cities, and that's where the value of the license is derived from. Allowing this to happen will greatly devalue my six licenses and cause me major financial loss. And I do not understand why this was put in, especially in the sponsor statement. It says the Senate Bill 52 will be implemented without negative impacts on businesses and responsible operators. I've relayed my concerns to Senator Machicki over a week ago, asking him to clarify why this was in the rewrite of Senate Bill 52, and I've not heard back from him, and I want to say thank you very much for taking my testimony, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, Mel, thank you. We've written down your concerns, and we will speak to the sponsor in regards to this, okay? And we really appreciate you taking time to testify today.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to go. We have Charlie Daniels, Roberta Brooks, Amanda Saylor, Brian Saylor, and Logan Daniels. So I don't know. Are you guys going to be testifying as a group? Because we've got 5 minutes, if possible. I can stretch that a little bit if we need to.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to
do it as a group. We've got Roberta here, and she's just going to do our kind of group synopsis for us. That way you guys have your topics in, so you can get to the people you need to have present.
Really, really appreciate that, because I've had four people working on fiscal notes waiting for over an hour, and but I don't like to keep the public on hold. So thank you very much. Please proceed with your names and your affiliation and your testimony.
Hi, my name is Roberta Brooks. I work with and run the Juvenile Alcohol Safety Program. I am also a member of the Healthy Voices, Healthy Choices Coalition. Every day I see and work with children ages 13 to 18 dealing with the harmful effects of alcohol and underage drinking and high-risk choices. They are uneducated and unaware about these choices and changing their lives permanently. Also, someone who will be directly affected by the results of passing the SB 52. I ask that we pass the bill to empower those of us who are working daily to keep kids from underage drinking, and thank you.
Excellent. Is there anybody else with your group that would like to testify today? Healthy Voices, Healthy Choices.
Hi, this is Logan Daniels. I also work with Roberta, and I'm a member of the coalition that she mentioned, Healthy Voices, Healthy Choices Coalition. I would also like to see this bill passed and the rewrite, just to kind of modernize the language that they've used, as well as to put the efforts in place in order to help prevent underage consumption of alcohol in the state of Alaska. We know that, according to surveys that have been done by the Mental Health Authority and things like that, the average cost to the state of Alaska for underage drinking annually is in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and if we can put efforts in place to help prevent the cost of that in the first place, I think that is something that we definitely need to work towards.
Excellent, Logan. And thank you all for all of the work that you are doing. If Roberta Brooks, there's five, if you just put your name and your affiliation and whether you support the bill, yes or no, for the last three, unless they want to say anything else, that would be helpful for, we're documenting all public testimony. But I need to get your names on the record.
Hi, this is Charlie Daniels. And I'm the director of Healthy Voices, Healthy Choices.
And
I vote yes on the bill.
Excellent. Okay, next.
This is Andy Taylor, and I provide evaluation support to the coalition and other coalitions around the state who are addressing both underage drinking and adult alcohol misuse. And I would support this bill.
Excellent. Thank you. And I think there's one more.
This is Brian Taylor. I also work around the state helping communities address these efforts, and I support the bill.
Outstanding. You all, I don't think anyone can thank you enough for what you do. So stay on task. We're here trying to help, and there's lots and lots of people that are working on this, and we appreciate your day-to-day work on that. So with that, we're going to go ahead and go over four of the fiscal notes today. And I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony unless there's anybody else in the room. Was there anybody else in the room? No? I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony because it's been open for like 10 days, so we've had it open for quite some time. But as promised, we have four fiscal notes, and I've got Click Bishop, who is our finance member here as well, but we're going to go ahead and call. First of all, I want to talk Brandon Spanos with Department of Revenue, if you want to come and just sit here. You know the drill. Thank you for being here, by the way.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for inviting me. Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Department of Revenue Tax Division, here to talk about our fiscal note. The fiscal note we provided is our initial fiscal note. It's a zero fiscal note for the division. I take that back. I'm sorry. It's it's an indeterminate revenue impact and a $50,000 capital ask for 2020. In order to update our tax revenue management system, the The bill has a only one section that, well, there's a couple sections, but really one thing that it does that would affect the tax division, and that is mainly in section 155 that implements a new, it actually expands the current tax on wine to shipments of wine into the state. So the current statute only applies to sale of alcohol within the state. This would expand it to include shipments of wine into the state. And that would broaden the base. It would require taxpayers to file with the, well, to register with the tax division if they're selling alcohol into the state, and then file tax returns. And so we would need to update our tax revenue management system and a companion system called Revenue Online basically allows taxpayers to file online their registration and as well as their tax returns. The proposed addition of revenue, or rather the addition of that tax base, we have an indeterminate number because we don't know how much wine is sold online or through mail order into the state, and so we don't have that data, but we do know it would be a positive effect on revenue.
Excellent. Senator Bishop, is there anything you'd like to add for DOR?
No.
Nope.
Other than we're going to find out how much wine's coming online in a year.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brandon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Next, Erica McConnell. Thank you for your patience, Erica. We really appreciate it. Is there anything you want to go over on the fiscal note?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Erica McConnell, the Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. We have submitted a substantial fiscal note, but I would like to point out that we do anticipate that the needs that are expressed in the fiscal note could be fully funded through program receipts, licensing fees, and we would not need any additional revenue from unrestricted general funds. So we are looking at an increased appropriation of $230.8,000 in FY 2020, $570.8,000 in FY 21, and then $55,600 in the out year starting in FY 22. Again, we believe these could be covered by existing revenues but would need an increased appropriation. We anticipate that the changes in fees would provide an additional $518,700 starting in FY 21 and $435,000 in the out years after that. And the reason that there is a higher expectation in FY 2021 is because all of the duplicate beverage dispensary licenses that are shifted into endorsements in the bill have a they have a biannual $200 endorsement fee, except for the first year when the endorsement fee is higher. And I'm trying to remember exactly how much. The one-time fee is $1,250, and then after that, it's $200 every 2 years. So that's why we anticipate a greater increase in revenues in FY 21 than we do in the outlying years after that. So the purposes are, for these requests of increase in revenue are can be kind of expressed in four big topics. One would be a two-year long-term non-permanent project assistant to manage the transition that the office will have to go through to implement this bill. And that would be a total cost of $98,200 in FY 20 and $88,200 in FY 21, split between personal services, and commodities. Number two would be an entire rewrite of all regulations. And this would entail extra board meetings to review and take public comment on regulations, attorney review, educational materials, printing and public notice fees, and postage for a total cost of $27,000 in FY20 and $27,000 in FY21. The third topic would be increased education and outreach as required by certain elements of the bill. We do have a local government specialist on staff, and we would be increasing his responsibilities to outreach to various communities through travel. So that would be an increase of $5,600 per year, which would cover 4 2-day trips each year. And then the fourth
main issue, which I did mention earlier, would be a new licensing software database, which would be, and we've massaged this to make sure that we can cover this from our revenues. So should this be approved, we would put out an RFP that would arrange to pay a smaller amount in FY20 when we wouldn't have any increased revenues, and then a larger amount in FY21 when we would have increased revenues, for a total of approximately $500,000. And then we would anticipate a $50,000 maintenance fee per year starting in FY21. We would be looking at something that is called software as a service, which is more of a web-based kind of software where the maintenance is the responsibility of the company you purchase it from, rather than putting more burden on our existing IT staff. That covers our anticipated expenditures. I'd be happy to address more details if you have questions. In terms of fee increases, as has been noted, there are certain biennial license fees that have been increased and a few that have been decreased. There's a new license for the direct shipment of wine from wineries, and we made a very conservative estimate as to how much fee we would take in for this, because we really, in the same way that Mr. Spanos has no idea how much taxes they would collect, we have no idea how many licenses we may issue under that license type. We assume an average of one endorsement per license. In reality, some licenses will have multiple endorsements and others will have no endorsement. And then the permit fees are clarified in this bill to be a $50 per day fee. This is a negligible increase that change is not shown in the fiscal note. So again, I would just like to reiterate that we do anticipate that all of the changes expressed in this fiscal note can be managed through license fees and would not be requesting any general fund.
Well, thank you for that. We have Senator Bishop.
Just a comment. I've read through your fiscal note several times, and only thing I'd just like to say, this bill's got a ways to go, two more stops, and I would hate to see you short yourself on your personnel to get this thing implemented by the date that's on the bill. So what I'm saying is you might want to rethink that range 16. Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done, and you might need more horsepower than what you got in the bill. That's all.
Point taken, Senator Bishop. Thank you.
And Erica, I'm going to also state, I was going to make a comment, but I usually let my members make a comment first. I would just say use every penny wisely, because every penny for government comes from the private sector that often suffer long and hard. So just please use every dime wisely, and we really appreciate the reason we wanted you on today, because it was a very complicated fiscal note, and sometimes fiscal notes stop bills, and that's why I just think it's really important to be completely transparent in regard to this. We've got one more. Matt, thank you for your immense patience. So you got the rest of the whole 2 or 3 minutes. So we started 2 minutes late, so if you need a couple, just – I think the committee members can hold on for 2 minutes. I try not to run them over, but we started 2 minutes late. So please proceed, Matt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Matt Davidson. I'm a social services program officer with the Division of Juvenile Justice. We've submitted a zero fiscal note, but upon review, I recognize actually the description that's in it is not accurate. It reflects the previous version of the bill in terms of the impacts on the crimes related to furnishing alcohol, which the sponsor amended after last session. And we will be resubmitting another zero fiscal note for this bill to move forward. The description related to furnishing is not correct for actually what the bill says.
Okay.
We apologize for that to the sponsor as well.
Okay.
So the division, over the course of the last several years and in under previous the statute, the division doesn't handle underage drinking for the most part. Most of those offenses related to underage drinking are handled by district court. And as you may recall, the same sponsor sponsored SB 165 a few years ago in 2016 that changed the penalties for underage drinking, decriminalized underage mm-hmm. drinking, and made it a district court offense that was payable by a fine and a referral to an alcohol education program that's administered by the Department of Health and Social Services. And so this bill, in two instances related to a minor entering a alcohol establishment, and one other applies those same penalties to underage drinking as we've done in other instances.
And I know we're running out of time, but that bill was a little bit of concern to me. And I want to make sure that it's doing what it was intended to do. And so anyway, at some later date, or if you have information, if we have had a decrease in you know, alcohol abuse or whatever the intended motive for that bill was by decriminalizing it, I think it needs to be revisited. So because I can tell you, I know people that are third time and felonies, and they had the soft ones, the misdemeanors, then the third time they got driving while under the influence, underage, then they ended up getting a C felony. And I just see some real behaviors out there. Defiance is probably the best way in a lot of our youth that are drinking. So anyway, I know that's a separate issue, but because you're with juvenile justice, sure. I do think that we need to monitor if the changes that were made are effective, or if we need to go back and make it a serious penalty so they are scared. And sometimes, you know, I know in Norway, by God, you get 10% of your gross salary. You're caught one time, and it's 10% of your gross salary. There's nobody drinks and drives basically over there because the penalties are so harsh and they're so serious in regards to it. And so I just think that sometimes models in other countries are good things to follow. But anyway, I want to say thank you, Matt. I know we got a little diverted there. But I just want to say thank you for being here and your patience today and your work. No. Okay. And with that, we're obviously going to be back here on Thursday. We're going to be handling amendments on Thursday. And I believe we have one more fiscal note to handle on Thursday. But that's the goal. We're only doing Title IV right now until this bill is out of committee. So with that, we're going to go ahead and gavel out at 3:02.